In the beginning, Arnold Brothers Est 1905 created the store. At least, that was the belief of thousands of gnomes who for many generations had lived under the floorboards of Arnold Brothers Est 1905, an old and respected department store. Gnome generations, that is. Gnomes live 10 times faster than humans. To them, 10 years is a long lifetime. The store had become their world, a world with a roof and walls. Wind and rain were ancient legends, so were day and night. Now there were sprinkler systems and air conditioners, and their small, crowded lives ticked to the clock of opening time and closing time. Some families of gnomes had grown rich and powerful and took the names, more or less, of the store departments they lived under, the Dell Icatessen, the ironmongery, the haberdashery. And into the store, on the back of a lorry, came the last gnomes to live outside. Among them was Masklin, Rat Hunter, and Granny Morky and Grimmer, although they were women and didn't really count. And, of course, there was the Thing. No one quite understood the Thing. Masklin's people had handed it down for centuries. It was very important. That was all they knew. When it came near the electricity in the store, it was able to talk. It said it was a thinking machine from a ship which thousands of years before had brought the gnomes from a far store, or possibly star. It also said it could hear electricity talk, and one of the things the electricity was saying was that the store would be demolished in 3 weeks. It was Masklin who suggested that the gnomes leave the store on a lorry. He found, oddly enough, that actually working out how you could drive a giant lorry was the easiest part. The hardest part was getting people to believe that they could do it. Anyway, it all worked. The lorry did leave the store just before it mysteriously burnt down, and hardly damaging anything very much, was driven out into the country. The gnomes found an abandoned quarry tucked into a hillside and moved into the ruined buildings. 6 months passed. This is the story of the winter. The sky blew a gale. The sky blew a fury. The rubbish heap by the gravel pits was deserted. The wind tore into the heap as though it had something particular against old detergent boxes and leftover shoes. One piece of paper that had been flapping for hours tore free and flew up into the booming air. It looked like a large white bird with oblong wings. Watch it tumble. It gets caught on a fence, but very briefly. Half of it tears off, and now, that much lighter, it pinwheels across the furrows of the field beyond. It's just gathering speed when a hedge looms up and snaps it out of the air like a fly. Winter, said Masklin firmly. It's called winter. Abbot Gerda frowned at him. You never said it would be like this, he said. It's so cold. Call this cold? Said Granny Morky. Cold? You wait till it gets really cold. Granny Morky always enjoyed doom. It was what kept her going. It'll be really cold then. When it gets cold, you get real frosts and water comes down out of the sky in frozen bits. What do you think of that then, eh? You don't have to use baby talk to us, sighed Gerda. We can read, you know. We know what snow is.
Yeah, said Dorcas. There used to be cards with pictures on back in the store every time Christmas fair came around. We know about snow. It's glittery.
You get robins, agreed Gerda. There's a bit more to it than that, Masklin began. Dorcas waved him into silence. I don't think we need to worry, he said. We're well dug in, the food stores are looking satisfactory, and we know where to go to get more if we need it. Unless anyone's got anything else to raise, why don't we close the meeting? Everything was going well, or at least not very badly. Oh, there was still plenty of squabbling and rows between the various families, but that was gnomish nature for you.
That's why they'd set up the council, which seemed to be working. Gnomes liked arguing. At least the council of drivers meant they could argue without hardly ever hitting one another. It depended on where you had been during the long drive. If you were one of the ones who'd been in the lorry cab, then you were a driver. All the rest were just passengers. No one talked about it much. It wasn't official or anything. It was just that the bulk of gnome kind felt that anyone who could get the truck all the way here was the sort of person who knew what they were doing. Masklin wandered back from the council meeting to his own burrow, down under one of the derelict quarry sheds. After a while, he reached a decision and pulled the thing out of its hole in the wall. None of its lights were on. They wouldn't do that until it was close to electricity wires, when it would light up and be able to talk. There were some in the quarry, and Dorcas had got them working. Masklin hadn't taken the thing to them, though. The solid black box had a way of talking that always made him unsettled. He was pretty certain it could hear, though. "Old Torrit died last week," he said after a while. "We were a bit sad, but after all, he was very old, and he just died. I mean, nothing ate him first or ran him over or anything." He stared at the unresponsive cube for a while, scraping his mind for other things to say. "Anyway, that means Granny Morky is the oldest gnome, and that means she's entitled to a place on the council, even though she's a woman. Abbot Gerda objected to that, but we said, 'All right, you tell her,' and he wouldn't, so she is." He looked at his fingernails. The thing had a way of listening that was quite off-putting. "Everyone's worried about the winter, but we've got masses of potatoes stored up, and it's quite warm down here." He thought some more. "I think that's about all the news for now." He lifted the thing up and put it back in its hole. He'd wondered whether to tell it about his argument with Grimmer, but that was, well, personal. He'd gone and said, "Look, now everything was settled down more, it was time they got married like the store gnomes did." And she'd said she wasn't sure. So he'd said, "It doesn't work like that. You get told, you get married, that's how it's done." And she'd said, "Not anymore." He'd complained to Granny Morky, and she'd said, "Good luck to her, wish I'd thought of not doing what I was told when I was a girl." Then he'd complained to Gerda, who'd said, "Yes, it was very wrong, girls should do what they were instructed." And Masklin had said, "Right then, you tell her." And Gerda had said, "Well, she's got a real temper on her, perhaps it would be better to leave it a bit, and these were, after all, changing times." Changing times. Well, that was true enough. Masklin had done most of the changing. He'd had to make people think in different ways to leave the store. Changing was necessary. Change was right. He was all in favour of change. What he was dead against was things not staying the same. His spear was leaning in the corner. He picked it up and went out for a long, serious think about things and his position in them. Or, as other people would have put it, a good sulk. The old quarry was about halfway up the hillside. There was a steep turf slope above it, which in turn became a riot of bramble and hawthorn thicket. There were fields beyond. Below the quarry, a lane wound down through scrubby hedges and joined the main road. Beyond that, there was the railway, another name for two long lines of metal on big wooden blocks. Things like very long trucks went along it sometimes, all joined together. The gnomes hadn't got the railway fully worked out yet, but it was obviously dangerous because they could see a lane that crossed it, and whenever the railway moving thing was coming, two gates came down over the road. The gnomes knew what gates were for. You saw them on fields to stop things getting out. It stood to reason, therefore, that the gates were to stop the railway from escaping from its rails and rushing around on the roads. Then there were more fields, some gravel pits, and then there was the airport. Masklin had spent hours in the summer watching the planes. They drove along the ground, he noticed, then went up sharply like a bird and got smaller and smaller and disappeared. They should be going where the planes went. That was what the thing had told him when it was still speaking to him. The gnomes had come from the sky and they should go back. It was their something beginning with D. Density. Their density.
worlds of their own they once had, and somehow they'd got stuck here. But this was the worrying part. The ship thing, the aeroplane that flew through the really high sky between the stars, was still up there somewhere. The first gnomes had left it behind when they came down here in a smaller ship, and it had crashed, and they hadn't been able to get back. And he was the only one that knew. There was a truck coming up the quarry road. It was such an unusual sight that Masklin realised he'd been watching it for a while without really seeing it at all. There was no one on watch. Why wasn't there anyone on watch? Half a dozen gnomes scurried through the dying bracken towards the quarry gate. "It was Sacco's turn," muttered Angelo. "No, it wasn't, his Sacco. You remember, yesterday you asked me to swap because I don't care whose turn it was," shouted Masklin. They scrambled up a bank and flattened themselves behind a tuft of dried grass. It was a small truck, as far as trucks went. A human had already climbed out of it and was doing something to the gates leading into the quarry. "It's a Land Rover," said Angelo smugly. He'd spent a long time in the store reading everything he could about vehicles before the long drive. The man sleepwalked in the slow, ponderous way that humans did, back to the vehicle. It backed around and roared off. "All the way up here just to stick a bit of paper on the gate," said Angelo as the gnome stood up. "That's humans for you." Masklin frowned. You couldn't trust humans with bits of paper. He pointed to the rusty wire netting. "Sacco," he said, "you'd better fetch it down." Miles away, another piece of paper fluttered on the hedge. Spots of rain pattered across its sun-bleached words, soaking the paper until it was heavy and soggy and tore. It flopped onto the grass, free. A breeze made it rustle. The stationery were a group of gnomes recruited from the various families when they were quite young, on the basis of intelligence and other good qualities. They ran the community, more or less, and their leader was Abbot Gerda. Abbot Gerda shuffled on hands and knees across the paper which had been taken down from the gate.
"Of course I can read it. I know what every word means."
"Well, then," said Masklin,
"it says here... where was it? Yes... It says here, the quarry is going to be reopened."
"What does that mean?"
"It's open already. Any fool knows that. You can see for miles."
The other gnomes crowded around. You certainly could see for miles.
"The quarry's a hole in the ground," said Dorcas.
"You can't open a hole unless it's been filled in, stands to reason."
"A quarry's a place you get stone from," said Grimmer. "Humans do it. They dig a hole and they use the stone for making, well, roads and things."
"I expect you read that, did you?"
said Gerda sourly. He suspected Grimmer of lack of respect for authority. It was also incredibly annoying that, against all the obvious deficiencies of her sex, she was better at reading than he was.
"I did, actually," said Grimmer, tossing her head.
"But you see," said Masklin patiently, "there aren't any more stones here, Grimmer. That's why there's a hole."
"Good point," said Gerda sternly.
"Then he'll make the hole bigger," snapped Grimmer. "Look at those cliffs up there."
They obediently looked.
"They're made of stone. Look here."
Every head swiveled down to where her foot was tapping impatiently at the paper.
"It says it's for a motorway extension. That's a road. He's going to make the quarry bigger."
There was a long silence. Then Dorcas said, "Who is?"
"Order. He's put his name on it," said Grimmer.
"She's right, you know," said Masklin. "Look, it says to be reopened by order." The gnomes shuffled their feet. Order. It didn't sound a promising name. Anyone called Order would probably be capable of anything. There was another crowded silence, the kind that gets made by lots of people thinking unhappy thoughts.
"Do you mean," said a gnome slowly, "that we've come all this way, we've worked so hard to make a place to live in, and now it's going to be taken away?" Gerda raised his hand imploringly. We don't know anything. We mustn't start getting upset until we've found out what's going on.
And then can we get upset?
Said another gnome sourly. Masklin recognised Nisodemus, one of the stationary and Gerda's own assistant. He'd never liked the young gnome.
I've never been happy with the feel of this place. I knew there was going to be trouble,
Nisodemus complained.
Now, Nisodemus, said Gerda, there's no cause to go talking like that. We'll have another meeting of the council, he added. That's what we'll do.
The crumpled newspaper lay beside the road. Occasionally, a breeze would blow it along the verge, while a few inches away, the traffic thundered past. A stronger gust hit it at the same time as a particularly large truck roared by, dragging a tail of whirling air. The paper shot up over the road, spread out like a sail, and rose on the wind. The council was in session, in the space under the floor of the old quarry office. Other gnomes had crowded in, and the rest of the tribe milled around outside.
Look, said Angelo. There's a big old barn up on the hill, the other side of the potato field. It wouldn't hurt to take some stores up there, make it ready, you know, just in case. Then if anything does happen, we've got somewhere to go. Yes, but there's this winter thing coming, said one of the gnomes. You know, cold, glitter on everything.
Robins, another gnome put in.
Yeah, said the first gnome uncertainly. Them too. Not a good time to go moving around with robins zooming about. Nothing wrong with robins, said Granny Morky. My dad used to say there's good eating on a robin.
This comment had the same effect on everyone's train of thought as a brick wall built across the line. Eventually, Gerda said,
I still say we shouldn't get too excited right at this moment. We should wait and trust in Arnold Brothers S1905's guidance.
There was more silence. Then Angelo said, very quietly, Fat lot of good that'll do us.
What did you say? Said Gerda slowly.
Only what everyone's been thinking, said Angelo.
And what do you mean by that? Said Gerda. Where is Arnold Brothers Est-1905, then? Said Angelo. How did he help us to get out of the store? Exactly, I mean. He didn't, did he?
Angelo's voice shook a bit, as if even he was terrified to hear himself talking like this.
We did it by learning things. We did it all ourselves. We learned to read books, your books, and we found things out, and we did things for ourselves. Gerda jumped to his feet, white with fury. Beside him, Nisodemus put his hand over his mouth and looked too shocked to speak. Arnold Brothers Est-1905 goes wherever gnomes go, Gerda shouted. You just made that up, Angelo snorted. I'm not saying that there wasn't, well, something in the store, but that was the store, and this is here, and all we've got is us.
Now Masklin stood up.
If you don't both shut up, I'll bang your heads together.
That seemed to work. Right, said Masklin in a more normal voice. Now, I think it would be a very good idea if everyone went and got on with whatever it was they were getting on with, because this is no way to make complicated decisions. We all need to think for a bit. The gnomes filed out, relieved that it was over. What we should do now, said Masklin sharply to Gerda and Angelo, is have another look at this barn. Can't say I'm happy with the idea, but it might be useful to have a bolt hole. Anyway, it'll keep people occupied, and that'll stop them worrying. How about it?
I suppose so, said Gerda with bad grace.
But no more buts, said Masklin. You're acting like idiots. People look up to the pair of you, so you'll set an example, do you hear?
But Arnold Brothers Est-1905 is important, said Gerda.
I dare say, said Masklin, as they came out into the daylight of the quarry.
The wind was dropping again, leaving the sky a deep, cold blue.
"There's no dare say about it," said Gerda.
"Listen," said Maskelyne, "I don't know whether Arnold Brothers exists, or was in the store, or just lives in our heads, or whatever. What I do know is that he isn't just going to drop out of the sky."
All three of them glanced up when he said this. The store gnomes shuddered just a bit. It still took a certain courage to look up at the endless sky when you'd been used to nice, friendly floorboards, but it was traditional, when you referred to Arnold Brothers, to look up. Up was where management and accounts had been back in the store.
"Funny you should say that. There's something up there," said Angelo.
"It's just a bit of paper," said Gerda, "something the wind's blown off the dump."
"I think," said Maskelyne slowly, as its shadow raced towards him across the ground, "that we'd better stand back a bit." It dropped on him. It was, of course, only paper, but gnomes are small, and it had fallen quite some way, so the force was enough to knock him over. What was more surprising were the words he saw as he fell backwards. They were Arnold Brothers. Maskelyne had always kept an open mind on the subject of Arnold Brothers Est 1905. When he thought about it, the store had been pretty impressive, what with the moving staircases and so on. And if Arnold Brothers S-1905 hadn't created it, who had? On the other hand, the world was miles across and full of complicated things. It seemed to be asking a lot of Arnold Brothers S-1905 to create the whole thing. The trouble with having an open mind, of course, is that people will insist on coming along and trying to put things in it. The faded newspaper from the sky had been carefully spread out on the floor of one of the old sheds. It was covered in words. Most of them even Maskelyne could understand. What all eyes were staring at was the quite small area of words, about gnome-sized, under the word people.
"That means people," said Grimmer.
"Really?" said Maskelyne.
"And the lettering underneath it says, fun-loving, globe-trotting millionaire playboy Richard Arnold will be jetting to the Florida sunshine next week to witness the launch of ArnSat-1, the first communications satellite built by Arnco International Group. This leap into the future comes only a few months after the destruction by fire of Arnold Brothers, the store here in Blackbury, which was the first of the Arnold chain and the basis of the multi-million trading group. It was founded in 1905 by Alderman Frank W. Arnold and his brother Arthur. Grandson Richard, 39. Who will..." Her voice faded to a whisper. "Grandson Richard, 39? Repeated Gerda, his face bright with triumph. "What do you think of that, eh?"
"What does globe-trotting mean?" said Maskelyne.
"Well, globe means ball, and trotting is a sort of slow running," said Grimmer. "So he runs slowly on a ball. Globe-trotting."
"This is a message from Arnold Brothers," said Gerda ponderously. "It's been sent to us. A message."
"A message meant for us," said Nicodemus, who was standing just behind Gerda. He held up his hands. "Yay! All the way from..."
"Yes, yes, Nicodemus," said Gerda. "Do be quiet, there's a good chap."
They stared at the picture again. It was made up of tiny dots. They showed a smiling face. It had teeth and a beard.
"It stands to reason," said Gerda more confidently. "Arnold Brothers Est-1905 has sent Grandson 39 to Florida, said Grimmer. "It's a type of coloured juice," volunteered a gnome. "I know, 'cause one day when we went over to the dump, there was this old carton, and it said Florida Orange Juice. I read it," he added proudly.
"So, Grandson 39 is going to be in this orange-coloured juice," said Dorcas doubtfully. "Running slowly on a ball and jetting, whatever that is, and liking it, apparently."
The gnomes fell silent while they thought about this.
All right, said Angelo, but what are we going to do then?
Gerda's mouth opened and shut a few times.
Why, it's obvious,
he said uncertainly. Tell us then, said Angelo sourly.
Well, it's obvious. We must go to the place where the orange juice is.
Yes, said Angelo.
And find grandson 39, which should be easy, you see, because we've got this picture.
Yes, said Angelo. Gerda began to sweat.
Well, and then we ask him to let us be left alone in the quarry.
There was an awkward silence. Then Angelo said, that sounds about the most half-baked...
What does jetting mean, said Grimmer. Is it anything to do with jet?
A jet is a kind of aircraft, said Angelo, the transport expert. Everyone turned to Masklin, whose fascination with the airport was well known to one and all. He wasn't there. Masklin pulled the thing from its niche in the wall and padded back out into the open. The thing didn't have to be attached to any wires. It was enough to put it near them. There was electricity in the old manager's office. He ran across the empty alley between the tumble-down buildings and squeezed his way in through a crack in the sagging door. Then he placed the box in the middle of the floor and waited. It always took some while for the thing to wake up. Its lights flickered, and it made odd beeping noises. Eventually, it said,
"Who is there?"
"It's me," said Masklin.
"Masklin, look, I need to know what the words communications satellite mean. I've heard you use the word satellite before. You said the moon is one, didn't you?" "Yes, but communications satellites are artificial moons. They are used for communications. Communications means the transferring of information, in this case, by radio and television."
"What's television?" said Masklin.
"A means of sending pictures through the air."
"Does this happen a lot?"
"All the time."
Masklin made a mental note to look out for any pictures in the air.
"I see,"
he lied. "So, these satellites, where are they exactly?"
"In the sky."
"I don't think I've ever seen one," said Masklin doubtfully.
"They are in orbit, many miles up. There are a great many above this planet."
"How do you know that?"
"I can detect them."
"Oh." Masklin stared at the flickering lights. "If they're artificial, does that mean they're not real?"
"They are machines. They are usually built on the planet and then launched into space."
"Space is where our ship is," you said.
"That is correct."
"If we knew where one of these things was going to be flown into space, and we could sort of hang on to the sides or whatever, or maybe drive it like the truck, and we took you with us, then we could jump off when we got up there and go and find this ship of ours, couldn't we?" The lights on top of the thing moved oddly into patterns Masklin had never seen before. This went on for quite a while before it spoke again. When it did, it sounded almost sad.
"Do you know how big space is?"
"It's pretty big, is it?"
"Yes. However, it might be possible for me to detect and summon the ship if I was taken above the atmosphere. But do you know what the words oxygen supply mean?"
"No."
"Space suit?"
"No."
"It is very cold in space."
"Well, couldn't we sort of jump around a bit to keep warm?"
"I think you do not appreciate what it is that space contains."
"What's that, then?"
"Nothing. It contains nothing and everything. But there is very little everything and more nothing than you could imagine."
"It's still worth a try, though, isn't it?"
"What you are proposing is an extremely unwise endeavour," said the thing.
"Yes, but you see, if I don't try, then it's always going to be like this.
We're always going to escape and find somewhere new, and just when we're getting the hang of it all, we'll have to go again. Sooner or later, we must find somewhere that we can know really belongs to us. Anyway, you were the one who told me that our home was up there somewhere.
This is not the right time. You are ill-prepared.
Masklin clenched his fists. I'll never be well prepared. I was born in a hole thing, a muddy hole in the ground. How can I ever be well prepared for anything? That's what being alive is, thing. It's being badly prepared for everything, because you only get one chance, thing. You only get one chance, and then you die, and they don't let you go round again after you've got the hang of it. Do you understand, thing? So we'll try it now. I order you to help. You're a machine, and you must do what you're told.
The lights formed a spiral.
You're learning fast, said the thing.
Gerda and Angelo were having a blazing row when Masklin got back. He didn't try to interrupt. He just put the thing down on the floor and sat down next to it and watched them. Eventually, Angelo noticed him. You tell him, Masklin, he said. He wants to go and find Grandson 39.
Do you?
Where do you think we should look? Masklin asked Gerda.
The airport, said Gerda. You know that? Jetting in a jet. That's what he'll do. But we know the airport, said Angelo. I've been right up to the fence several times. Humans go in and out of it all day. Grandson 39 looks just like them. He could have gone already. He could be in the juice by now. You can't believe words that just drop out of the sky.
He turned to Masklin again.
You tell him, Masklin.
Let's go to the airport, said Masklin.
There, said Angelo. I told you, Masklin isn't the kind of gnome.
What? Let's go to the airport and watch. Angelo's mouth opened and shut silently.
But,
he managed. It must be worth a try, said Masklin.
But it's all just coincidence, said Angelo.
Masklin shrugged. Then we'll come back. I'm not suggesting we all go, just a few of us. Angelo hesitated.
Then I'll go, he said, just to prove to you how superstitious you're being.
Good, said Masklin.
Provided Gerda comes, of course, Angelo added.
Aha! Shouted Gerda. You think I won't come? It'd be worth it just to see your face.
That's settled then, said Masklin calmly. And now, I think we'd better see about keeping a special watch on the road, and some teams had better go to the old barn. Just in case, you know. Grimmer was waiting for him outside. She didn't look happy.
I know you, she said. What are you planning?
I can't tell you. I'm not quite sure myself.
It's to do with the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, if I'm away for a little bit longer than... She stuck her hands on her hips.
I'm not stupid, you know, she said. Orange-coloured juice, indeed. I've read nearly every book we brought out of the store. Florida is a place, just like the quarry, probably even bigger. And it's a long way away. You have to go across a lot of water to get there.
But it must be worth a try. Masklin scowled.
There's only one place where we can ever be safe, and that's where we belong, he said. Otherwise, we'll always have to keep running away. But suppose something goes wrong. Supposing you don't come back, I'll...
Yes, said Masklin hopefully.
I'll have a terrible job explaining things to people, she said firmly.
Oh. Masklin looked disappointed. Well, I'm going to try anyway. Sorry.
Next morning... Masklin found Grimmer in her school hole under one of the old sheds, supervising a class in writing. She glared at him, told the children to get on with it, and came out into the passage.
"I've just called to say we're off," said Masklin, twiddling his hat in his hands.
"Electricity," said Grimmer.
"What?"
"There's no electricity at the old barn. You remember what that meant? On moonless nights, there was nothing to do but stay in the burrow. I don't want to go back to that."
"Well, maybe we were better gnomes for it," mumbled Masklin. We didn't have all the things we've got today, but we were cold, frightened, ignorant and hungry, snapped Grimmer.
We had each other, said Masklin.
Grimmer examined her hands.
We were just the same age and living in the same hole, she said vaguely.
She looked up.
But it's all different now. There's, well, there's the frogs, for one thing.
Masklin looked blank.
I read about them in a book, she said. There's this place, you see, it's called South America. And there's these hills where it's hot and rains all the time. And in the rainforest, there are these very tall trees. And right in the top branches of the trees, there are these, like, great big flowers called bromeliads. And water gets into the flowers and makes little pools. And there's a type of frog that lays eggs in the pools. And tadpoles hatch and grow into new frogs. And these little frogs live their whole lives in the flowers right at the top of the trees and don't even know about the ground. And the world is full of things like that. And now I know about them and I'm never, ever going to be able to see them. And then you, she gulped for breath, want me to come and live with you in a hole and wash your socks.
But I don't wear socks, Masklin pointed out. This was apparently not the right thing to say. Grimmer prodded him in the stomach.
Masklin, you're a good gnome and bright enough in your way, but there aren't any answers up in the sky. You need to have your feet on the ground, not your head in the air.
She swept away and shut the door behind her.
I can do both, Masklin shouted after her, at the same time.
He thought about it and added,
so can everyone.
He stamped off along the tunnel. Bright enough in his way. Gerda was right. Universal education was not a good idea. Gerda had turned over the leadership of the stationery to Nicodemus. Masklin felt less than happy about this. It wasn't that Nicodemus was stupid, quite the reverse. He was clever in a bubbling, sideways way that Masklin distrusted. He always seemed to be bottling up excitement about something, and when he spoke, the words always rushed out, with Nicodemus putting ums into the flow of words so that he could catch his breath without anyone having the chance to interrupt him. He made Masklin uneasy. He mentioned this to Gerda.
Nicodemus might be a bit over-enthusiastic, said Gerda, but his heart's in the right place.
After Masklin, Gerda and Angelo had gone, life at the quarry began to get back to something like normal. Dorcas sent a couple of his more agile young assistant engineers up the wire netting, just in case, to stuff the rusty padlock full of mud. He also ordered a team of gnomes to twist wire round and round the gates as well. The truck came back the same afternoon. The two gnomes watching the lane hurried back into the quarry to report. The driver had fiddled with the padlock for a while, pulled at the wire, and then driven off.
And it said something, said Sacco. Yeah, it said something, said his partner, Nooty Kiddy's clothes.
She was a plump young gnome who wore trousers and was good at engineering and had actually volunteered to be a guard instead of staying at home learning how to cook. Things were really changing in the quarry.
And what was it? Said Dorcas encouragingly. It said...
Sacco took a deep breath. His eyes bulged, and he attempted the foghorn mooing that was human sound.
Bloody...
All right, you two, Dorcas said. Well done. Get back on watch. Thank you. He watched them go off hand in hand, and then he wandered away across the quarry, heading for the old manager's office. There was a crack in the woodwork by the door. Dorcas slipped into the familiar gloom under the floor and padded along until he found the switch. He was rather proud of this idea. There was a big red bell on the outside wall of the office, presumably so that humans could hear the telephone ring when the quarry was noisy. Dorcas had changed the wiring so that he could make it ring whenever he liked. He pressed the switch. Gnomes came running from all corners of the quarry. Dorcas waited as the underfloor space filled up and then dragged up an empty matchbox to stand on.
The human has been back, he announced. It didn't get in,
but it'll keep trying.
What about your wire? Said one of the gnomes.
I'm afraid there are such things as wire cutters. There was the sound of running feet outside, and the gate guards piled in through the crack.
He's back! He's back! Panted Sacco. The human's back!
All right, said Dorcas. Don't worry about it, it can't...
No, no, no! Yelled Sacco, jumping up and down. It's got a pair of cutter things! It's cut the wire and the chain that holds the gate shut, and it...
They didn't hear the rest of it. They didn't need to. The sound of an engine coming closer said it all. It grew so loud that the shed shook. And then it stopped suddenly, leaving a nasty kind of silence that was worse than the noise. There was the crump of a metal door slamming, then the rattle and squeak of the shed door. Then footsteps. The boards overhead buckled and dropped little clouds of dust as great thumping steps wandered around the office. The gnome stood in absolute silence. There was some clicking, and then the muffled sound of a human voice making its usual incomprehensible noises. Then the footsteps left the office again. The gnomes could hear them crunching around outside. A small gnome said,
"Mom, I want the lavatory, Mom."
"Shh! I really mean it, Mom! Will you be quiet?"
All the gnomes stood stock still as the noises went on around them. Well, nearly all. One small gnome hopped from one foot to the other, going very red in the face. Eventually, there was the thunk of a truck door closing, the growl of its engine, and the motor noise died away. Dorcas said very quietly, "I think perhaps we can relax now." Hundreds of gnomes breathed a sigh of relief.
"Mom!"
"Yes, all right, off you go." And after the sigh of relief, the outbreak of babble. One voice rose above the rest.
"It was never like this in the store," said Nicodemus, climbing onto a half-brick. "I ask you, fellow gnomes, is this what we were led to expect?"
There was a mumbled chorus of no's and yes's as Nicodemus went on.
"A year ago, we were safe in the store. Do you remember what it was like at Christmas fair? Do you remember what it was like in the food hall? Anyone remember roast beef and turkey?"
There were one or two embarrassed cheers. Nicodemus looked triumphant.
"And here we are, at the same time of year..." "Well, they tell us it's the same time of year," he said sarcastically. "And now they tell us we might even have to go to some barn that hasn't even got proper floorboard for us to live under, as Arnold Brothers Est 1905 intended, where next, we ask ourselves, out in a field somewhere? And do you know what is the worst thing about all of this? I'll tell you!" He pointed a finger at Dorcas. "The people who seem to be giving us all the orders now are the very people who got us into this trouble in the first place!"
"Now, just you hold on," Dorcas began.
"You all know I'm right!" shouted Nicodemus. "Think about it, gnomes. Why, in the name of Arnold Brothers Est 1905, did we have to leave the store?"
There were a few cheers, and several arguments broke out among the audience.
"Don't be stupid," said Dorcas. "The store was going to be demolished." "We don't know that," shouted Nicodemus. "Of course we do," roared Dorcas. "Masklin and Gerda saw..." "And where are they now? They've gone to..." "Well, they've gone to..." "Yes, they've gone!"
Nicodemus lowered his voice to a sort of angry hiss.
"Think about it, you gnomes. Use your brains!"